Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to the inspirational Lindsay Bennett.
I have completely made my peace around dying. It's leaving the girls, and that's what I always say to people. It's leaving the girls that is my thing. I think because my mom has already passed on before me, I think that's another strange reason why I am so at peace with death. Do I want to die? Absolutely not. Do I want to be here for decades? Absolutely. But I'm at peace.
Lindsay lives in Longford with her daughters, Zoe, who's 13, and Hayley, who's 8. And in 2019, she found out she was one of the women caught up in the cervical check scandal brought to public attention by Vicky Phelan. As you'd imagine, this is a difficult conversation at times, so please check the show notes before you listen. We talk about the powerful bond she had and still has with her mother, Leslie, undergoing a hysterectomy at just 28, dealing with the terminal diagnosis and even arranging her own funeral, and trusting her gut instinct. She's been getting alternative cancer treatment in Mexico and in Germany over the past year and a half to help strengthen her immune system and support her mindset. And thankfully, it's yielding good results so far, despite being told a few years ago that she probably wouldn't live this long. I was honoured to meet her and have this conversation. Like a lot of people, Lindsay, I heard about you for the first time as one of the many women who were caught up in the cervical cancer scandal. And, you know, I didn't expect to be sitting here with you in, what are we, April 2022, having a conversation with you looking so well. And the vibe from you is so vibrant. So it's actually giving me chills to even say that. And I would imagine more so for you, from everything you have been through over the past number of years. But just to say at the beginning, I'm truly honoured to meet you in person, because like a lot of people, I have watched on in absolute admiration in how you have handled a devastating diagnosis that's been given to you. And all you've been through, and you're sitting here with a giant smile on your face. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you very much. I always am like absolutely blushing when people compliment me, because I'm just like, no, I'm just Lindsay.
Let's start the chat with you. At 20 years of age, you became a mum for the first time. Your baby girl Zoe was born. I would imagine a very happy time.
Yeah, it was amazing. All I ever wanted since I was like about 14 was to have a baby.
Really?
And yeah, my mama would be like, please do not get pregnant at 14.
Okay.
So when everyone asked me, did your mom and dad kill you when you came at 19 to be like, I'm pregnant? And I'm like, no, they were relieved. although they were very supportive to my face anyway. I'm sure mom was probably going to other people and worried that it would hold me back. And, you know, that's one of the devastating things about her still not being around, that she should actually know that because of what happened me now and the fact I can't have kids, that it's like, thank you, thank you, thank you that I did have kids young. And I even used to be like, I have this weird feeling that I'm not going to be able to have them when I'm older.
Did you?
Yeah. And I always say that it was my angels that are speaking to me. And I know for some people, they'd be like, oh, that's so airy fairy. But I always had this feeling. And that was another reason as well that I went for smear tests so young, before 25. Because I had this weird feeling that that is what was going to happen to me as well. And I didn't dwell on it or anything like that, but I just always had this feeling. And sure enough, I was right. I mean, technically from 25, from my first smear test, I was already in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, so even though I was 28 when I eventually had it, a hysterectomy.
Yeah, hysterectomy at 28, my God.
Yeah.
So at 20, and you had this feeling that you always wanted to be a mother. I'm fascinated by it. So becoming a mother was obviously a joyous experience. But within the first year of Zoe's life, you had to contend with a diagnosis that your mother received.
Yeah. And like that, mom was left undiagnosed for years, and she kept going with the lumps in her breasts, and she kept being told.
So it was breast cancer.
It was breast cancer. And like when they actually tested it, because I think they sent away to America or something like that, she'd had it for at least 10 years at that stage.
Oh, gosh.
Which meant that she would have only been in her like early 40s and stuff when she had it. But she went with the lumps. And I mean, by the time she was diagnosed at 54 and she died at 58, her breasts were 70 and 80% full of cancer by the time she was diagnosed. It had gone the whole way throughout her body.
Okay.
I mean, she was sent for intense physio that when she had three tumours down her spine, because they were telling her that like, no, you're fine. And nearly that she was imagining pain. And I remember I used to go in. It's why I'm not a primary school teacher. I used to go in and help mam, because when I'd be in second school, I'd have different holidays, especially for the summer. And there'd be the odd day you'd have off different and I'd help her. But she used to have to wear a Velcro belt to try and make it feel like her hips were still in place so she could stand up and down. And sure enough, afterwards, finding out that it was cancer gone through her hips as well. And that's why she was in so much pain all the time for years. But being told, no, you're imagining it's muscle, and next thing it'll be bone, and no, it'll be muscle again. And yeah, sent for all these intense physios and stuff that she shouldn't have been going for. She's lucky she was still in one piece. I remember saying when they realised that it was through her body, she was actually in hospital, and they came flying in with a spinal board and a neck brace and everything, and put her in all of this lying in the bed going, wow, we've just had your scan back, like you have cancer all through your bones, through everything, like, and they were trying to like keep her together after years of being sent for lots of different things that could have had her with a lot more damage.
The frustration of that, because it's something that I've actually had this conversation with a lot of different people, not just with the cancer diagnosis, but with other ailments that they have.
Yeah.
You often know, because who knows your own body better than yourself?
Yeah.
No one.
Yeah.
Yes, I fully respect and bow my head to science and doctors, but we are always the best authority on our own body.
Yeah.
And that must be very frustrating that she wasn't listened to.
It's been absolutely devastated. Me and mam have had our moments where we've falling out many times, but at the end of the day, she is my mam and she's taught me so many amazing things. And to not have her here for Hayley and Zoe is the most devastating thing. And the fact that she died at a time where you start being your mam's bestie again, and that I can't go out for lunch with her. I know one of my friends' boyfriends turned around there before COVID times and was like, does Lindsay Bennett ever eat lunch or anything in her own house? Because there's always like, you know, someone tagging that they've been out to lunch with me or anything like that. And I think I'm trying to overcompensate at times for not having the fun of going out for lunch with Mam. Because, you know, we'd often do like a cuppa and lunch and stuff like that. And that's one thing that absolutely kills me, to not do something as simple as that with her and to have that bond with somebody where, you know, you're just having a lovely time of sitting and having the chats and something nice to eat. You know, that devastates me not having her for that. And especially while I was sick, there's so many times where I was like, I don't have my mammy and I don't have that, you know, that little extra security. You know, that's devastating. Although one of my best friends, Mam, has been so amazing for me when I'm at home, and she's been such a wonderful support. So I can't forget about her, but there's definitely been moments where it's like, you know, Mam would have checked that, or, you know, she'd have been by my side.
So you're 33 now, but your mum is gone 9 years.
9 years, yeah. I was pregnant, 6 months pregnant with Hayley when she died, exactly 3 dates to her due date. And so Hayley, strangely enough, she does have a little cry sometimes about Mam, even though she never met her.
Okay.
But yeah, I was 6 months pregnant when she died, and she actually died on my brother-in-law's birthday, and we buried her on my little sister's 18th birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was just before my 25th birthday, because I would have been 25 in July as well. And Mam amazingly had actually got me a present and stuff. So she had before she died. But I remember going up to the hospital, and you could see that the light was gone from her eyes, even though she'd say a few things. But I knew, and I remember saying to her, I'll see you on Tuesday, because this was a Sunday. But I was bringing Zoe to Tato Park. So I was with her friend just to do something with her, because when Mam was sick, there was a lot of times that poor Zoe would have to be dropped and I'd be like spending time with her and things
sure,
like that. And
yeah.
I know Mam was like, I was like, I don't have to go to Tato Park tomorrow. And she was like, no, no, go. And I was like, well, I'll see you on Tuesday. And she goes, no, she says, don't come back. And I knew she was saying goodbye. And I remember walking out of her room, and I went back in again to give her another hug, because I was like, this is the last time you're going to see her. You need to tell her as well that you love her. And I went back and I gave her a hug, and I was like, I love you so much. And she was like, love you too. She was like, bye, bye. And I was like, bye. And I walked out of the hospital, and I rang Hayley's dad, who I was with at the time, and I was bawling walking up the street. And I said, I've said goodbye to my mammy for the last time. And, you know, he was like, no, I haven't. And I was like, no, I'm telling you, I have. And I was like, I can't believe it. And then sure enough, that day I was in Tato Park, my dad rang me, and he was like, Lindsay, your mum's not good. And he was like, she's not good. Like, she probably, you know, she won't make the night, they don't think. And I was like, I've said my goodbyes. And I says, Mam told me not to come back. And I was like, if I'm meant to see her, I was like, I will see her on Tuesday morning, because I used to go up at 6:30 in the morning, or get the bus at 6:30 in the morning to be up with her. And sure enough, that morning I woke up at 3:00 and I was like, she's gone. And I fell back to sleep and I turned off my alarm. And next thing, I woke up at 7:00 and I'd 5 missed calls from Dad. And I tried to ring him back and he didn't answer. And then next thing, he eventually rang me back and he was like, your mom's gone. And I was like, I know. And I was like, what time? And he goes, she passed away about 3:00 this morning. Yeah. So, and like, the thing is, Mam has been in my dreams 3 times with me being diagnosed. She told me, you've got cancer and you need to go to the hospital. And that's why, like, I kept going back and I was like, my mom is back in my dream. She's telling me again. And they'd be like, no, no. But sure enough, she was right. And so she's still very much around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's different having someone in the physical. So I do. I miss her insanely.
Yeah.
You know, and there's definitely things I do that I'm like, you'd be like, you'd always say, I'm not going to do that when I'm a mother. But there's amazing things. And there's a lot of people that would be like, how did you think of that? Or how would you work that out? Or you're so organized. And I'm like, I got it from my mama. So although I let Zoe go to her first disco, whereas Mam was a lot more strict on me.
I suppose that was her way of protecting it in her own way. Wow. I mean, we've only been talking a short time, Lindsay, and I'm just... it's very powerful what you're speaking about, and also incredibly sad. So for what it's worth, I'm so sorry, because even if this is what the conversation is about, speaking to somebody who's lost their mother in very difficult circumstances, this would be a very moving conversation. But unfortunately, this is not where the conversation ends. And in your early 20s, going for a smear test is not the norm. You know, we think when we're in our 20s that we're invincible. Sure, we can do, you know, party all night and we'll be grand the next day. And, you know, usually that is the case. But there was a voice, there was a gut feeling, there was something in you telling you at the age 21, 22 to go for a smear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think I've ever met anyone who's gone for a smear at that age.
Yeah, well, I remember seeing something. It was like, reasons to go for a smear test: if you're sexually active, if you've been on the pill, and if you've had children. And I was like, ding, dong, ding. Mm-hmm. I was like, I am hitting on all of those. Yeah. So I was like, absolutely, I will. And then Mam had also been diagnosed, even though hers was breast cancer. And it wasn't that she was carrying a gene or anything like that. And I actually got tested for my girls as well. And I'm not carrying a gene, thank God. Yes. But... I was like, no, there's too many reasons. And I was like, I need to do this. And I remember I paid €90 for it.
Yeah, you paid because it's not covered at such a young age.
Oh, no, it's not covered. Anything under 25, it's not covered, smear test-wise, which is insane. I think, okay, not everybody, if they're not sexually active, especially, and if they're not having kids and not on the pill, then maybe. But... I think for someone who is especially sexually active, I mean, and if they're under 25, you need to get on that. And even if they feel that, oh, you know, by the time you get to 25 from 21, if you did have HPV or anything like that, that it can, your body can knock it out. Why not know and be able to keep an eye on it?
Sure.
Then, well, more than likely by 25, it'll be okay, even if you had anything at 21. Why chance these things, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that we need more labs and stuff here. I've been told that's why, unfortunately, we have to, you know, send it abroad to get tested a lot of the times. But, you know, why aren't we working on these things more? And why isn't it done, if these things are known, that we need more and more labs here and more people to study in testing stuff? But yeah, absolutely. I knew that it was an important thing for me to do.
Yeah. And I know you're really passionate about getting the message out there, how important it is to go for your smears. I mean, 3 months after my baby girl was born, she's 5.5 months now, I went for the smear again, because you gotta keep on top of it, I suppose. And I know that's a loaded statement in your situation, but nonetheless, despite what has happened, it is still important to go for the tests and keep on top of it.
Absolutely.
What happened to the first one?
So the first one, it came back. I remember coming back something that it was like inconclusive, or they couldn't read it properly. So that was fine. They were like, come back and do it again or whatever. So I did. I came back and did another one, and it came back fine. And then I went back again to do another one then a year or so, I think it was, after that. And it was at 22, and it came back saying that it was also fine. And I was like, perfect, you're supposed to do them at that stage every 3 years, whereas I think someone said they're possibly pushing it to 5 years, but I wouldn't be as down with all the information as much now. I'm always like, just go for it. But I was like, that's perfect, I've 3 more years and then I'll be 25 anyway and into it. So did one at 25 and came back again, did another one at 26, came back, did another one at 27, the public ones. And I remember...
And every time you went for them, was there something in you saying, I don't know, I'm not feeling, there's something going on?
The last one especially, I was like...
So what, you're 27,
like
28
this, 27, so I was. And I was like, yeah, I wonder, is there possibly something with this one? And... No, sure enough, it came back saying that it was clear and it was okay. And a couple of months or so passed, and I was like, I'm just starting to not feel myself. And my mum at this stage was in my dreams. I was having nightmares then as well. I was waking up and I'd be in pools of sweat. I remember when the girl staying with me, and she was like, I didn't realise how bad the sweats were that you were talking about. And like, the bed would be saturated that you would honestly think, and this is no exaggeration, that someone had poured water. It was so bad that you couldn't just like roll over. You'd have to strip the entire bed and nearly put towels down to be able to put new sheets on to lie where it was. Like, it was insane.
Yeah.
And I was used to be crying sometimes walking up the stairs in the house because it was so strenuous on me and on my body. And then near the end, I was starting to have the bleeds. And then there was one stage where I went into doctors and I was like, I'm bleeding now for 3 or 4 weeks. And then that continued on even for another 3 or 4 weeks after that. But I'd already been to the doctor and I was like, there is something wrong. And I was like, well, your last smear test wasn't even a year ago. And it was fine. So they weren't concerned. And they were like, probably just a polyp. And so then I was like, look, I've never used my health insurance before. Can you please just refer me on?
Yeah.
And it was like, right, okay. And of course I went in, it was in the December. I went in and it was the day as they were starting to go into the Christmas holidays. So it took till January. Well, it was only 2 weeks or that, but that's the magic of private health insurance, which honestly has been one of the most important factors during my story as well, because other than that, there would be a lot more delays and everything. And there was already a few delays in what has happened in the last couple of years. And as soon as the guy seen me in Mullingar, the specialist, he knew that it wasn't going to be good. And even though I had been checked over and you could see what obviously wasn't polyps, which was tumours, and they thought that that was going to be okay, but as soon as the specialist seen me, he knew that it wasn't. And I mean, he only touched off me and there was blood like everywhere. And I was in then the next day.
Yeah.
And he just said, oh, sure, we'll see if we can burn whatever that off is. And he still never used like the word biopsies or anything with me. So I was like, all right, okay. And I said, that's fine. I said, because I have to get back to work or whatever. I've got to get to the kids. And he was like, oh, busy woman. And I was like, yeah, well, I had to work 2 days to pay your fee. And that's you know, €150 it was to see him, but it's the best €150 I've ever spent in my life. But I was at the same time, like, I was a working mom and I had to do that. And that was taking out of your usual budget of what, you know, you'd be working with. But thank goodness that he did. And
so was he not using words like tumor or okay?
No, I remember him laughing at me. Oh, so I'm treating you for a polyp, am I? And right. I thought it was a bit weird, like him saying it.
Was he making light of it?
I think he was thinking, you don't realise what's actually happening here, you know? And I remember him coming down to me the morning of the next morning when they were bringing me down, and he said, oh, nurse, look at this lady now. This is a busy lady. Because I was nearly bringing out schedules and everything, trying to see when I could definitely fit this in around the kids and everything.
So when you went in, did he basically say, you ain't going anywhere?
He was like, you'll be back here in the morning.
Right.
Because the first off, he said, can he be in on Friday? And I said, no, I can't do Friday. I said, I'm back working. I swapped the day so I could work today to even come in. And he was like, oh, busy lady. And he goes, I'll see you tomorrow.
Right, this is not up for discussion.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and I was like, that's great. I don't work on Wednesdays.
Suits the schedule.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
yeah,
okay. And he was like, oh, busy lady. And that's when I was like, yeah, well, I had to work 2 days and swap days and
you're a mother.
Here.
And right, so you're in the next. And what's going through your mind?
I was just like, I think this is going to be a little more than what is expect or what's been suspected or whatever has been told to me. But I was like, look, we'll go with the flow, and there's nothing I can do till I know. And I was just like, right, make sure the kids are sorted. And sure, I was only supposed to be in for like a couple of hours to be brought down and to be done. They ended up having to keep me for the night. They couldn't get me to wake back up from the anaesthetic properly. I had to be given 3 shots of what I think was something like adrenaline to get me up. And I ended up spending the night, woke up. I think it took them 8 hours or something in the end from when I went down.
And what did they do at that point?
They were like, you need to stay in. And I remember a nurse.
So was it just it was an internal exam?
It was just, they were going to try and burn what he could see.
Right.
And take it off. And obviously it was doing a biopsy, but he hadn't used those words for me.
Yeah.
But I remember the nurse coming in, and he came in as well, and the nurse held my hand, and I was like, this isn't good. But I was like, I was sitting there with like oxygen tubes and stuff in me and wires everywhere when it was supposed to just be like doing what they were doing. And I'd be home that, home early afternoon, like, and he just goes to me, if that's malignant, he said, that's a hysterectomy. And I was like, all right. I was like, okay, everyone's very dramatic, so they are here. But the nurse just squeezed my hand, and I was like, okay, so I'm guessing that's a hysterectomy. But I was like, all right, yeah. And he goes, isn't it funny for someone who's so busy that she now has to stay in for the night? And I was like, all right. And he said, you're also going for a CT scan in the morning. Okay. And I was like, okay. And then the nurse came in to me the next morning, and she goes, I think they were all just trying to warn me. And I remember my poor sister coming in, and she was like, you didn't tell me this was serious, because she came in and there was tubes everywhere. And I was like, I didn't think it was.
It must have been really surreal for you to go from, you know, clear tests the whole way along to something's going on, but I don't know what it is. It might be a polyp, to now you're staying in and now it looks like it might be a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot to try and absorb.
Yeah, it was certainly strange. And I was like, okay, bit of roller coaster. And especially, you know, you don't really hear much about operations and stuff when it comes to cancer and different things like that. Especially, you automatically just think it's chemo and radiation straight away and stuff like that. So, and I never thought that, like, if there was something down there, that it would be a thing of, like, something that would take away being able to have kids. No, an operation like that, you think, oh, you just cut off a little bit. And like, I had a radical hysterectomy, so they took like part, I think, of the urethra and like different bits inside. There was little chunks of everything for a safe perimeter that was taken. So I wasn't really expecting that.
At such a young age, you don't. Yeah, why
no,
would you expect
absolutely
that?
Not. But the nurse had come in to me even the next morning when I was going home that day, and she was just like, the doctor, and she said his name, must be very worried about you when you're going for a CT scan this morning. And I was like, right, this definitely isn't good at this stage. I was like, okay. And then I remember going home that day, and obviously there was still too much anaesthetic or something left in my body, but I came home, wasn't feeling well, had pains, and I don't have medication in my house. I was someone who like never would even take a Panadol, didn't even have a packet in my house.
Yeah, okay.
And my sister handed me a pain relief tablet, and I even had to say to her, oh, that says codeine on the front of it. I was like, I presume I just take one, because I know people say that they're very strong. I took that, and next thing, I had to be brought off in an ambulance. I was nearly foaming at my mouth, where it was nearly like an overdose in my body, where freaked out, and I was like going into seizures and fits and stuff. And so I ended up back up in the hospital. So I did. And it was, I think, for something like 10 hours. I couldn't move my hands, my legs, my whole body was like paralyzed. Yeah. And I remember my dad being like to the doctor, she wouldn't answer me. And I was talking to her now, and she just wouldn't answer me. And I was like, I don't think you realized like how badly I was actually in some sort of seizures and foaming from my mouth and stuff. Yeah. So I ended up, I was in so much agony the next day then, because my muscles had been in spasms. But I got to go home early that morning, once the feeling and stuff came back. And I think that was all little signs to be like, your body just really does not do good with anything other than natural stuff, really.
Mm.
And I'll never forget my friend. I came home, ended up vomiting everywhere, but one of my best friends, who I'm actually maid of honor for next month, she her mum rang me and she was like, "Are you okay, Lindsay?" And I was like, "I'm here getting sick." I was like, "Oh," and she's like, "I'll be there in 10 minutes. And she landed and next thing the phone went and it was a phone call and it was like, "Hi, so this is just the oncology gynecology department ringing in Dublin and they're like, we just need you to come up for your consultation." And I was like, "Sorry?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "We need you to come up for your consultation." And I was like, "Consultation for what?" And they're like, "From your scan results." And I was like, "I'm not getting those till Tuesday."
Okay.
And
so they didn't realise you,
no, they didn't realise that,
that
I
you
didn't,
hadn't been told
hadn't
anything.
Told. And so this I think was like a Thursday. And they were like, "Okay, just come up for the consultation next week." And I was like, no, like, what is it? They're like, no, just wait and talk to the hospital. So I was like, okay. And my friend's mum, so we just looked and I was like, okay, well, that's the final piece of the puzzle, really. And I was just like, okay, here we go. But I actually ended up getting a phone call then. I had to go for like a really quick MRI on the Monday then. And then, so I knew nothing. Actually, I went to work on the Monday because I said to work, I was like, "Look," I was like, "I don't think this is going to be good. And I'd love to get like one last day of work in before I think I'm going to be off for a while, possibly." And I actually had to go for the MRI on the Tuesday morning. And then on the Tuesday afternoon, I had to go back into Mullingar to be told. And I brought up all my smear test results letters and I put them down the table because I knew. And he just goes, "Phew." He says, "I wouldn't mind those." He was like, "No." He was like, "You have cancer."
Were you on your own?
No, my friend, my other best friend, because I have two best friends, and my other best friend, her mom came with me and my auntie. My dad wanted to come as well, but I made him sit outside. And I remember I could see the tears and stuff in their eyes. And I was like, "There's no need to be crying." I was like, "We're going to go to Dublin. We're going to work out a plan." And I was like, "It'll be fine." And I remember being so relieved that I was told that I had cancer. Because I was like, I honestly believed I was losing my mind and that I was having some sort of a nervous breakdown because I knew I wasn't feeling well. And I remember one of the first things that they actually said to me in Dublin is, "You must have felt like you were losing my mind." And I was like, "That is bang on the money. That's exactly how I felt." Like, I remember there at one stage, there was 2 or 3 days where I couldn't actually get words out of my mouth because like there was something strange going on in my brain. And
did you think it was cancer?
From mom and my dreams and stuff, that I was like, "It has to be cancer."
Okay.
You know, but I remember at one stage even thinking, like, I was giving out to the kids so much and I was like, we all give out, but it was different. Like, usually I'd be a lot more relaxed. And I was like, I'm on edge all the time for anything small or big. Like, it made no sense. And I just remember being relieved, being like, okay, that's what's wrong with me.
And was a shock, I wonder, because, like, you know, again, I'm certainly not comparing, but I know what it's like to be told you have cancer. And it's like one of those moments you won't forget it, because it's not what anyone ever wants to hear. But I know for me, the tears came much later. I remember actually just being in disbelief. And even like you, behind it all, there was a part of me that worried, because I had also had an experience of having a biopsy that came back clear when I wasn't clear.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're sitting there and you're automatically going into, this is going to be grand. Is that the way you are? Are you a natural kind of pragmatist? Let's get on with it. It's all going to work out okay.
Yeah, because I even had someone turn around to me and be like, "Oh, it's easy for you, Lindsay, to make decisions like just hopping on a plane and going to Mexico." And I was like, "You have me so wrong." I was like, I was panicking nearly every day before I was going up to that, but I just knew I had no choice. Say, so I was like, no. So for things, I like to be more of a problem solver than like a panicker. So I always say, if you see me worried, you know there's trouble.
Yeah.
But generally I'm like, there is no point. And I actually, just as you were saying about the crying, I remember being like, I'll cry on Thursday when I'm told what I have to do.
Okay.
And so I knew on Thursday I was going up for the consultation and to talk to them. I knew then that that's what I'd be told, definitely what was going to be happening. They were like, "I'm so sorry, but you're never going to have kids again, naturally. you have to have a hysterectomy. And that is when I just like, I absolutely cried and I broke down and I was devastated. But they were like, the only thing is you are being treated, you know, to kind of be cured, and that like we are hoping that you'd be cancer free again from this. And
so what stage had you been given at this point?
It was 1B something, so it was just about to go into stage two.
Okay, so this is in your own strange way, in terms of a cancer diagnosis, it's kind of good news. Yeah. It means that it's still early. It's still I'm doing air quotes, early enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it should have been.
It should have been.
But they did the hysterectomy. I had loads of complications in between, lost part of my bowel, loads of different stuff.
Right.
After it with complications. But 6 months later, my mum is back in my dreams, back in my nightmares, back sweating, not feeling myself.
Mm.
And I went up, because I actually had my hysterectomy the day before Valentine's Day. Right. And they used to just think that I was an absolute nutter, because I was like, so for Valentine's Day, any chance I could wake up with a pair of boobs or something? I was like, seeing as I'm going under, I was like, just a little bigger. I was like, nothing, you know, happy Valentine's Day to me from you. I was like, surely there is a man in the building that does that. And there used to be like, this girl is going for a hysterectomy, a radical one, life changing, very serious.
But I also get it. We need humor in dark times, so I was like, as a coping mechanism.
I was like, you might as well, you know, do something useful out of it as well at the same time. And like, I had such a fear of needles, because when I was pregnant and 19 with Zoe, I got absolutely butchered. So I did in a hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning. Nurse tried about 8 or 9 times up and down my arms trying to get a vein. And she kept saying the words, I'll get it the next time, I'll get it the next time.
Right.
And so now if someone doesn't get my vein first time, like, well, I have to say the first 3.5 years, I've done so much better the last year and a half from a lot of psychological work that I did in Mexico and Germany.
Okay.
Around needles.
Is that therapy?
Yeah. It was unbelievable. And like, I have nearly pulled machines across operating tables and stuff, and they haven't got an injection first time into my veins, and it takes a couple of goes. But you see, that's what people automatically say when they get it first time. Oh, don't worry, we'll get it this next time. And I'm like, it just used to bring me straight back
to that time, yeah.
To that time where I'd been absolutely butchered. I'll never forget the bruises. And I have to say, I was lucky to get a needle, I'd say about twice, for blood getting checked by the time I was pregnant with Hayley then. Like, I've had such a fear, and nearly the needles were even going to be harder than actually the operation itself in a weird way. Like, I've struggled so badly, and hands up to all the nurses and doctors that have, you know, being sympathetic, whereas there's been some that weren't. And then by the end of it, when they think that I'm gonna get it, it'll be fine, and then they realize how bad, you know, my veins and stuff are. So there's been a lot of factors that have been actually really hard to deal with that people wouldn't nearly assume. And that's why I've been blessed with PICC lines. You know, when I remember being told, no, we'll get the best in the hospital to give you those cannulas. And I was like, no, I was like, I'm not doing it if I don't have something more kind of permanent in. So I had a PICC line, which isn't as permanent nearly, say, as a port, but it'll stay for, you're supposed to have it for about 12 weeks. And I've had mine for 9 or 10 months at times when I've had them. But,
and it just stays in.
It just stays in, yeah.
Yeah,
it goes that bit deeper. But yeah, I remember my first needle in Dublin, and it didn't go in for just getting blood. And like, I'd be crying, and there'd be other people crying. And I've said needles sometimes are actually
The hardest part,
yeah.
Okay.
You know, and I've tried staying hydrated. I've tried wearing 3 jumpers. I've tried having gloves. I've tried hot water bottles. But I've always been told, you're really curly and tiny lady-like veins. And I'm like, oh. I've always had a huge fear around needles after that. And it's, you know, some would say cruel, but I do say it's kind of ironic in a way that the universe has made me deal with that. And but I have been very blessed in the fact that I've done so much work on it in Mexico, and Germany in that I'm a lot more calm about it.
Okay,
you know, the only problem that I've ever had that I'm like, we can't solve this, is the needles. So I am very much more a problem solver than someone who's like really like, oh no, we can't do this.
Yeah.
You know.
So. Well, I mean, I suppose it's indicative of the fact that your Instagram handle is Cancer with Gratitude. I think it says it all, because you're not sitting back saying, poor me. And I'm sure you've had your moments and you are perfectly entitled to them, but that ultimately you are approaching this phase in your life with an incredibly strong and resilient mindset, which is admirable. So at this stage of your life, again, let's just bring us back to, you're 28, you've had a hysterectomy. What happens then for the next few years?
Yeah, so I had the hysterectomy in the February. Then in the September, I knew I just wasn't myself again. And I went in and I mentioned it. And they'd kind of had a look. But it wasn't the usual guy that'd seen me. And then they're like, oh yeah, I send you for a scan. And they thought in the scan that, or actually I didn't hear back from them for a couple of weeks, and I came back again and they were like, oh yeah, no, we'll send you for an MRI, but we think you've had a prolapse. And I was like, all right, okay. And then into December, I remember my boss that I was working with at the time, and she came in, she goes, hiya. And I just broke down crying, and she was like, oh, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I was like, I'm telling you, I am losing my mind again. I was like, my mom's in dreams. And I was like, I don't think that people understand. Like, I do believe this is back. Because, and then when I went in, I was talking to a guy and he was just like, you know, kind of implying that maybe I was just having, you know, mental health issues, and that, you know, I was, in some ways I was told that I was maybe just obsessed with being sick now.
Oh,
and
God,
you know,
whoa. That was said to you.
Yeah. And I was just like, no, I'm not. You don't understand. Like, this is how I felt. And end up going anyway for another scan. And then when I came back,
that's actually outrageous to say that.
I know.
Especially the fact that you've already gone through a hysterectomy. I mean, that's a profound operation. I'm actually really quite shocked that somebody would think that and say that.
Truly believed that they had taken, you know, such a safe perimeter, and I say that in air quotes.
Yeah.
But it took then, I was back in the February actually, my normal guy that I see was back, and he goes, yeah, I believe you had a prolapse, and you know, we can do surgery or we can leave it a little while. And then I remember him looking, and he was like, oh, you know, I can do the biopsy or whatever to, you know, just keep you happy or whatever. And I was like, okay. And it actually, in the March, I came back in and they did the biopsy. But I remember them holding up the biopsy because I was awake for it, and holding it up, and they were like, no, definitely can't see this being cancer. And then I was like, oh, great. And I remember my cousin was waiting outside the door, and because she was up in Dublin at the time, and I said, oh, that's brilliant. I was like, they don't think that it will be. And I went to a healer that weekend, and he just goes to me, you know, you've got cancer, when I walked in the door. And I was like, all right, like a faith healer. And I was like, oh, all right. I was like, yeah, I've been thinking that. And that was fine. And then it was 2 days later, I got a phone call from the hospital, and the nurse was like, you need to come up. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay. I was like, well, I'm in work. I can come up next week or whatever, and I can work this. And she goes, no, like, you need to come up. And I was like, okay. I was like, I'll be fine. I'll come up, you know, next week. And she was like, no. She's like, you don't understand. She's like, you really have to come up. And I was like, okay. She's like, it's not good. And I was like, okay, not good as in like it's cancerous, or not good as in it's precancerous? And she goes like, no, it's cancer again. And I was like, all right. I said, well, I actually heard that 2 days ago from a healer, and I've been thinking it for the last 6 months. I was like, it's grand. I was like, I'll be up when I can. I was like, I'm not shocked. And yeah, I don't know if it was the next week that I still waited to just go up then, or I remember my poor boss walking in the door and she was like, hey, Lindsay, how are you? And I was just typing away. I was doing the stuff. And she was like, how are you? And I was like, I'm grand. I was like, didn't I tell you? I was like, the nurse rang me there. I was like, my cancer's back. Didn't I tell you all along? And I remember going, oh, what? And she was like really upset and hugging me. And I was like, no, it's fine. I was like, I knew this. I was like, we have answers again. And I was like, I have to go up next week. And I'd say actually probably then. She was like, no, you are going up this week. But I was like, look, I've been down this road before. I was like, I've been told this before and yeah. I've known it before. And I was like, it's only been 6 months since my hysterectomy. And I was like, so... Actually, no, it'd been a year since I hysterectomy, but I was like, I knew 6 months after it that I'd been feeling, and it took that other 6 months for me to finally have gotten my biopsy and to get it.
Yeah.
So I was just like, it's only been growing maybe for about 6 months or so. So I was like, no, I was like, we're going to go up and we're going to get it sorted.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Can I ask, how were you feeling about the medical profession at this point? Is that a loaded question?
I have so much respect, but at the same time, I know so many things that like I haven't even said, and that's out of respect of stuff that hasn't gone straight-laced that it should have. Or stuff that hasn't been listened along the way that I have said. We really need the medical profession. We do. I just feel that it's very old-fashioned sometimes in the way that we're still in the same box. I just wish so much that everything that I do in Germany could be brought to Ireland. And I don't understand all these red tapes, you know, especially when Germany is an EU country.
Yeah.
And I just feel, am I not a good enough example? And there's lots of other ladies and I'm not sure, gentlemen, it's more ladies that have spoken to me that have gone the route that I have and have gone to the, say, Mexico, where I've been, that were given all the diagnoses that they shouldn't still be here, but are still here and are still very much living with cancer, but in a healthier way.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm just like... You know, and I don't understand why we can't try something else, you know, and loads of people are like, oh, well, they're not tried and they're not tested. And it's like, well, I actually have read books where there's thousands of people like the Radical Emission, Kelly Turner. Unbelievable. She went and has spoken to thousands of people. And lo and behold, they have gone and done the stuff that I've done. I remember there were 7 or 8 factors, could be even 9 actually. And I was smiling because 8 out of the 9 or whatever it was, I was already doing by the time I listened to her book. And I was like, amazing. I was like, I'm possibly one of the people that could easily end up in her book because I am doing. Yeah. I'm being kind to my body. You know, and even though I know sometimes... In Mexico, they'd be like, okay, if something is really, really, you know, if your cancer is really, really going really fast, sometimes you need a hard hit of something to try and poison it and then build yourself up. So it's not that they're even completely opposed to chemo. It's just, For some people like myself, you need a more natural,
holistic
route.
Approach. Yeah.
So when you went back to Dublin, and you were told over the phone the cancer has come back, what were you told then?
So I had to go up, and my auntie actually came with me. So she did. She'd been amazing with minding the girls, and them having to stay with her. That we went back up, and they were like, "Yeah, it's going to be internal and external radiation, and it's going to be chemo." And that's where I had the little argument about getting my first PIC line in. And I was like, right, okay. And they were like, you know, 80% of people would have that chemo and not even know that they're having it. And I didn't particularly want to do it because I always had a gut feeling that it wouldn't be, you know, something that I'd react well to, even though I was told that, you know, it's not as hardcore as some of them, even though, of course... Sensitive Sally here. There was hearing loss, nerve damage, kidney damage, and numbness. And it wouldn't even be in me minutes, seconds nearly. And or nausea was another thing. And they all were hitting me. Okay. It had to be stopped. I had emergency hearing tests. I was having like ridiculous ringing in my ear. And I remember sitting with a nutritionist and being like, oh my God, is that like a fire alarm or what's the story with that bell? And she was like,
oh God,
there is no bell, Lindsay. And right. I was like, what? I was like, yeah, there is. And she was like, no. Like, it was intense. But I'd wake up every hour and I'd be shaking with the sweats from the chemo and stuff.
So that had to stop.
Yeah, so it had to stop, yeah.
And when they told you your cancer is back, what did they say it was? What stage was it at this point?
I don't think I was ever actually given a stage that time.
Okay.
I was just told it was back, but
we need to treat it.
Yeah. So it was like, the crazy thing is like they took half the wall off the inside of my vagina as part of the safe perimeter. And I mean, that was a good bit down from where, say, my cervix and where, like, my womb and technically where the cancer had been down. And, like, that was within 6 months that was back and that was growing in that wall, you know? And, okay. But yeah, they were hoping that they were still going to be treating me, you know, to be able to get rid of it. And, you know, radiation was going to be more of the backbone. So when the chemo was had to be cancelled, they weren't like extremely worried. And yeah, so I remember the lady, one of the nurses in the radiation centre, she'd come out and she'd be like, Leslie, it's time to go in. And I'd be like, especially the times that I've been doing chemo and radiation at the same time. And I'd be like, that's my mum's name. That's not my name. And she'd be like, okay. I don't know why I keep calling you that. I don't even know anybody calls Leslie.
Right.
And I was like, that's my mum. Whereas back then I was like, my mum's dead. And now I'd be like, that's so nice. That was a sign from mum. Yeah. You know, but, and they were doing that over to me in Germany and Mexico as well. And I was like, this is so strange. Like, you know, but I do smile and I'm like, okay, I think I'm on the right track. Yeah, like when someone calls me that.
Wow.
But,
so when do you hear about the cervical cancer scandal? When do you hear that you're one of the 221 plus?
Yeah.
When do you hear about Vicky Phelan? Like, when does all that happen?
Yes. So I remember like saying it to them when I first ever got diagnosed in 2017. I was like, this is so weird. Like, how are all my smear tests, you know, coming up saying that they're clear? And I was like, is there something wrong with them? And I remember being told, no, yours is an extra aggressive form. It doesn't necessarily show in a smear test. And I was like, all right, okay. And I was like, there's
what did they say again?
They said that yours is an extra aggressive form and it doesn't necessarily show on a smear test. And I was like, oh, right. I was like, okay. And I was a grand. And I didn't pass much heed because I was like, they're the specialist.
You've hit the nail on the head as well. Often when we hear these from medical professionals, we just accept their wisdom and knowledge and we go, oh, okay.
And that is their
even
speciality.
If you don't get it, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was like, that's fine. And like, I was getting my hysterectomy and that. So, you know, I was being treated to be cured. So I didn't really dwell on it too much. But the funny thing is, I remember there's a counsellor that I've gone to for over 10 years. Yeah. And she, I think, used to be a nurse. And I remember her being like, really? But I still passed no heed. And because I said that to her when they had said it to me.
And so then, she was sceptical about it. Okay.
And so that was fine. And then I remember when I came back, and then I'd wondered, like, I was like, this is insane. But it was in April. I found out it was back in March 18. And then it was in April 18 that I started my treatment. And I remember sitting in the waiting room for my radiation. And that's when Vicky Phelan came out on the steps of the forecourts. And yeah. She was saying about cervical check. And I was like, that's really weird. I was like, and I didn't, to be honest, because they generally have the TV volume down and stuff like that, and like in the waiting rooms, and you're reading stuff on it. And I was like, that's so strange. I was like, I've been asking about mine. I'd asked about mine and I was told, you know, no, definitely nothing. So I came back to them again and I said about her and I was told, no, you're nothing got to do with that. We told you already. And I was like, all right. I was like, okay. So I kind of was like, oh, once again, I'm being supposed to be getting treated to be like cured and to be okay. So I just ignored it. But then I still say it, and I still kind of kept saying it, and I was saying it to people as well. And I know when I'm saying something to people and I'm repeating it again and again, I know that I'm trying to tell myself, no, Lindsay, you think that something's not right, and you're saying it because you're waiting for someone to be like, yes, just go and sort it. So
yeah,
I was actually getting my PIC line changed, and there was a nurse that turned around to me and she was like, pick up that phone. And she actually, we know her, and she knew my mum well, and she was like, pick up that phone and call them. And she picked up the phone there and then with me. And she goes, if your mum was here, she'd make you ring them.
Okay.
And I rang them and I was like, yeah, I'd like to get my smear test rechecked. And they were like, all right, right, okay. They said it would take about 6 months. So it actually took about a year. And lo and behold, I was told, I got my letter out in the post as well, as what I'm told, that there was, you know, suspected that more than likely there's been wrong test results given over a few of them. And that is honestly one of the worst points of my story over the last 5 years. I remember the hurt and the pain and the shock. And then I was like, I did everything I could to not be in the situation that I'm in. And like, now I am. And
you were so responsible. You were far more responsible than the average 20 something going for your smear before the kind of the age that is recommended. I mean, yeah, as you said, you did everything. Were you angry?
Yeah, you see, that's the strange thing. I've never really been fully properly angry. Like, I understand that these things happen in life where we get let down. And I was never fully properly angry. I was very disappointed and very hurt. I think maybe that day was the first day that I had a bit of anger. And I just remember ringing my best friends and bawling down the phone. And I was like, I think I've just found out that I never had to go through any of this had I just been given the right results. I said, I think all this has been literally hasn't been needed at all. Like, and I think that's where a lot of people, because I've seen articles put up where people trying to imply that I'm trying to dirty the name of cervical check, which couldn't be further from the truth. They just assume that I am and that I'm that, like, I think someone had sent me an article and was saying that, like, the numbers were nearly down from cervical check, and it's probably the likes of the women in the 221 doing this.
It's an outrageous statement. Anyone who's saying that is troubled. I can't understand that at all.
And I'm like, that's completely the opposite.
Of course it is.
Because what people don't actually understand is my smear tests did what they were supposed to do. It's that the person testing them didn't put down the right answer.
Yeah.
Because when my tests were checked, they did exactly what smear tests are supposed to do. It showed that there was something there and that I needed to get help. Mm. It is just that, unfortunately, somebody was incapable of writing down and probably didn't even obviously look at my test, because I know for the forecourts that they were checked a few times and there it was impossible to ever, I think, even think for a second that there wasn't anything on those smear tests from what I was told. Obviously, I didn't see the slides, but I was told that they were checked by a couple of different places and it was very clear on them that there was something wrong and that I needed to be warned. So wow. That's what is one thing that's really upsetting and disappointing, is like smear tests are so important and mine did most definitely work. It's just I was given the wrong answer.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose I'm trying to think, there's so much probably going through your mind at this point that you had this feeling all along and now here you are and now you're one of not the 2 to 1 but the plus the plus. Others.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we fast forward then to December 2020 when you sat down in front of a camera and delivered that letter that you wrote to the government? That has been viewed how many times now?
Well over 500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's probably still being shared. It's still being watched. And I know, like many of us who watched it, I absolutely bawled the whole way through. I think you would have to be made of stone not to feel the raw emotion from you as a young woman, as a mother, as somebody who was so wrongly treated. I'd like to play about a minute of it.
Yeah.
So we're going to just play the last minute or so and we'll come back and chat right after this.
I sit here with tears streaming down my face right now. With fear that my girls won't get to have their mammy there to support them in their futures. That I can't protect them and make sure that they have the opportunities they need in life to be happy, successful, and feel loved. I would not wish this on my worst enemy. The pain, loss, and suffering I have endured, and to now have to sit in court in January 2021 and listen to what has been my life is something that I hope no more women will have to go through. And I will advocate for all women, especially single mothers like me in this position. Protecting our children is our role, and we will go to the ends of the earth to make this happen. Our past is full of pain. Let our futures be full of healing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember the pain and the worry and how scared I was back then. And it's just insane to think that I'm nearly a year and a half on from then, and I honestly did not think that I'd be alive.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And
it takes a bit.
Makes me so proud to still be here, but you know, it frustrates me, and this is why I say again about not being able to get the treatment over here that I found that does help me live. And yeah, I cannot tell people enough how important it is to go for your tests. And if you still don't believe in the answer that you've been given, to trust your gut and go on, you know, because unfortunately these things do happen. And unfortunately, medical people, they don't always get it right. And Yeah.
And they're human, and human error.
They are, and
there is
human error. There is, absolutely.
That was your letter to the government. What has the feedback been like? What have you got personally?
Yeah, so the Taoiseach rang me, so he did, after that. And he was, you know, I'm sorry for what you're going through and what's happened. And, you know, he'd hoped that, you know, it wouldn't be that I'd have to go to trial and that we could try to do mediation. And, you know, I've had people come at me being like, you know, that it's taken from Ireland or whatever, having trials and having compensation for stuff like this. And I'm like, well, there's actually American labs and stuff that was in that court case as well. It wasn't just about taking, because I've had people being like, oh, you're trying to take from the taxpayer and stuff like that, which I've paid tax through the years and stuff as well.
I'm so disappointed to hear that you have
now,
this
it's very small minority, very, very small.
Okay, good. But the fact that it's happening at all is wrong.
You know, it's people who aren't properly educated and properly don't realise. But I was like, I don't think anyone, they realised that at that stage it was for my girls. It wasn't even necessarily getting anything for myself. It was to have my girls protected and for them to be able to pursue things in life.
But you don't even have to say that.
Without having your mum, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes without saying. Yeah. And you are, even though you're not a victim, because it's not that you don't have a victim mindset, but you were and are the victim of wrongdoing. So that was, you recorded it on Christmas Eve, but you didn't release it till a few days later.
I knew that, like, people were going to be having their Christmas, and then I knew with the new year. So I wanted to do with that. It wasn't putting, you know, huge sadness, because it was very emotional, very raw and very, very real. And Sarah Foster from SJF Productions was just so amazing that she even came in and met me on Christmas Eve to do it. And, you know, she's supported me so much with making goodbye videos for the girls and creating lots of photos and stuff for them. So they would have them, and, you know, she was all set up and organized for recording at my funeral. And because back then, obviously, we were in the pandemic, and so if anything happened to me, not everybody would be able to come to my funeral. And so we'd organized all that. I mean, even from when I'd found out on the 5th of November 2020, I had organised my funeral the next day from start to finish with my Reverend Simon Scott, who was amazing. And, you know, Sarah had helped making sure that I had all the bits and bobs organised for that, just to make it as beautiful. And, you know, a thank you to everybody who'd been part of my life.
You're saying this with such ease. You're speaking so fluidly about something that really at your age should be so far in the future. I suppose none of us know. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know when our lives are going to end. Every day is precious, but it's not the norm to plan your funeral when you're in your early 30s.
No, it most definitely isn't. But honestly, that has been one of my biggest power takebacks that I've done. As I also say, the only thing that we can't, you know, work out a solution to is death, because, you know, when you're gone, you're gone. But any problem before that, I always feel that you can. And I just felt, okay, well, we are all eventually going to go one day, and the only thing that I can make sure after I'm gone is that my funeral is something that ends up people saying that was so beautiful. And, you know, we always sit down and be like, oh, you know, they're shining down on us now, and oh, they'd love that, or they'd be thankful of that, or I'm sure that meant a lot to them. And so I want people to know for sure stuff that did mean a lot to me, and how grateful I was that everybody had been part of my life, and that I was better, you know, for knowing them, and happier, and, you know, that I had no regrets, and that, you know, just to mind my girls, and most importantly, you know, goodbye for my girls, and kind of, you know, tips and tricks of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you think of that video, and I know instantly when it starts to play, the tears start to roll. you didn't necessarily think you'd be here at this stage.
No.
And here you are. But because of all you've been through and because of organising your funeral, you are facing death as a real possibility in a way that a lot of us, and I know I felt that myself when I was told I had cancer, because the second you're told you have cancer, you do, your brain goes to a scary place. But for you, in a completely different way, how do you feel about dying?
I have completely made my peace around dying. It's leaving the girls, and that's what I always say to people. It's leaving the girls that is my thing. I think because my mom has already passed on before me, I think that's another strange reason why I am so at peace with death. Do I want to die? Absolutely not. Do I want to be here for decades? Absolutely. But I'm at peace, and that's why I tell you, like, I took my power back around yeah. that. I think I was just like, well, okay, whew. You know, that is done and dusted and it's sorted. And I was actually talking to my reverend the other day, and he's like, yeah, you know, we'll have to meet up again and just check that things are, you know, still the same as what you want. And he was like, I'm so happy, like, obviously, that you're still here. He actually is hopefully coming out to help me plant all my organic veg that I'm starting to try and grow.
Lovely.
But yeah, it's amazing that I'm still here. Like, literally, I should have been gone about a year now. And I'm like, anything I decide from, you know, here on, I'm just like, I'm happy to go with it, because I got that time back that I thought I didn't have. And like, I spent 3.5 years in hell before I released that video. 3.5 years of hell, even though it was supposed to be a time where I was meant to be being treated to hopefully be cured. And the last nearly 18 months now has honestly been the happiest and healthiest I've felt, even though it's supposed to be the worst that my cancer is.
Yeah, because you were told that if you were to live this long, that you would have no quality of life. You'd be probably in a wheelchair.
No.
And here you are running up the stairs.
Yeah.
Because you had to leg it to the loo.
Leg it to the loo, yes. I actually had home help starting me there on Monday. It's something that I've been trying to get for a year. And I actually had someone be like, oh, please don't tell me that means you're going downhill. And I'm like, no, this means that I'm giving myself an even better hand. I mean, she, the last 3 mornings has just been an absolute dream. She's had my breakfast on the table for me, like cooked while I'm getting Hayley up and ready and out. And, you know, even for the likes of running here today, you know, I wouldn't have had that time to like heat up the gluten-free part oats and but she had it done and it was ready. So I was nipping around and I was like eating as I go, and it was just amazing. And then I've cleaners who come in and do a deep clean for me usually every Wednesday who are also amazing.
Yes.
And but what it just takes those bits off.
The pressure off, yeah. And what people probably
I
don't know,
I can focus on my machines.
Yeah, okay, good. And that's the thing. What people probably don't know is that I read somewhere that you get up very early.
5:30
Half five.
5:30 to 7:30 to try and get a good chunk of machines done before Hayley gets up.
So again, you're just trying to be the best mom you can be to your girls. And that's putting huge pressure on you, because you're practically getting up at 5:30 is like getting up in the middle of the night still.
Yeah, during the winter months, it's still dark outside. You're like, ugh. But it's been a lot nicer the last little while. But yeah, no, it's trying to fit everything in and trying to stay motivated, because once it comes to, you know, late afternoon, you kind of start hitting a slump. And that's even if I like lay in bed till 8:30, still hitting that slump. You know, I think you start going down. So I think Spain have the right idea when you have your
siestas. Yeah.
Siesta.
If this isn't, it may be an insensitive question to ask. So if it is, feel free not to answer. But you've spoken so much about following your gut instinct, you know, your mother's presence with you, speaking to you, communicating to you, having a sixth sense for things. And you've said, obviously, that you want to live. You want to be here. When do you feel? Like, do you feel you're going to die?
Yeah, I think that's actually one thing in 2017, I remember thinking, no, I actually don't feel like dying and it's going to be okay. And I have to say, in November when I was told, I was like, I actually think I really am going to. And then before I could get, because I had the four courts and different stuff, and I couldn't get on the plane quick enough to get to Mexico, I knew I had a couple of months till I could get going. And so I started like doing infusions. There's two infusions here that I can get, which is vitamin C and turmeric, and or curcumin, I think they call it another name. And I had started using them, and it was the first time, because I'd always been told, just eat what you can, don't worry, it doesn't matter. And this is the first time that I changed my mind and I was like, no, I'm going to do the gluten-free, it's called the, I think, anti-inflammatory diet. So I'm like, no gluten, no dairy, no animals bar white fish, and all as organic as I can. And started doing the infusions, and sure enough, I was like so lucky, because when I got to Mexico in February, it seemed to all still be staying still, but that was the little things that I was doing till I could get over. And I remember when I touched down in Mexico, and I just had this feeling then, I was like, I think this is going to be one of the best decisions I've ever made. And then when I got to the clinic and I was only a couple of days in, I was like, this definitely is, because there was one part of me going, I really hope there's a building at the end of it. You know, because I didn't know, yeah, like going to Mexico, if it definitely was real or if it was a scam or what was happening. I didn't know, but I just knew I really believed. And it's something that I had been saying for a while about boosting my immune system before I even knew that my cancer was back. Boosting my immune system. And I loved everything that they were talking about doing, is what I was like, yes, this is what I want to do. I mean, reflexology is one of the things I did in college. So I did back many moons ago now. And I always felt like it was a fabulous, say, holistic treatment. Mm. And yeah, I felt like I definitely have a bit more time. And then when I came home, after a month of being immersed, and it's like very intensive in Mexico, not as intensive, Germany's a little lighter, but Mexico is very intensive. And I was like, I actually feel healthier than I have in years and years and years. And it just so continued and kept doing what I was doing. And I'm never ever delusional, and I know that anything could happen, and cancer is, you know, there's no proper rhythm to it, and it just depends. And I mean, when I came back and I tried the Pembro immunotherapy, that actually, I think my immune system started to get shot again, and that's when their November just gone by, it wasn't looking great again. It wasn't under control, and that was because for a little while I'd stopped doing my machines because it was so constant, up and down and up and down, and I was like, oh sure, I'm being hit with this. And then sure enough, once I found Germany and I'm back doing full time again what I'm doing, it seems to be stalling again, you know. So I think I need to still keep continuing to trust myself with this natural process. And the sensitivity test came back there. I paid a couple of thousand for it in Germany. And there was 12 natural compounds. 10 of them had well over 60%. Some of them were 70s and 80%, saying that there was a good sensitivity to them actually helping me and my type of cancer that I had.
Okay.
And the four chemos also came back as well that I'd never heard of before, as well. But I was like, okay. And they even said to me, they're like, in the years that they're there, they very rarely find someone with that many natural compounds that come back.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And it's just so unfortunate that there's six of them that I need that just aren't ones that you do in Ireland, whereas two of them are, and two that came up that were two of the highest were the vitamin C and the curcumin, which I, of my own accord, started that time when I got diagnosed, and I couldn't understand like how I'd gotten so lucky that they worked, but it's because they actually send the sensitivity test that I've only just got back a year and a half later are actually coming up, that they are two things that should help me. And sure enough, they have.
I don't mean to sound corny, but that line from The Shawshank Redemption is in my head. You know when he says, the Morgan Freeman character says, get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have gone from, you know, years of pain, and you're still in pain, I would imagine. You're still, you know, this is constant for you. But you've gone from, wait a second, am I going to die, to, no, I'm living and I'm healing.
Yeah. Like, and that's one of the reasons I actually think I was so emotional hearing that back, where I was just like, it's one thing being alive, but it's another thing being alive and not living. And that's exactly where I was. I wasn't living, but yet I was technically being supposed to be getting cancer free, like all those times. And that was hell. 2019, which was one of the only years in the last 5 years that I was supposed to not have cancer, but it was actually one of my worst years because my body was in wreck and ruin, and I was constantly in with stuff going wrong, and it was absolute hell. So it was, and that's why I actually can't believe that, like, I've been so fortunate that I am back living.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm going and experiencing things and experience them while feeling good, you know. And since I went to Mexico in the last nearly 18 months, I don't know if I've even nearly once took so much as a paracetamol. I don't take painkillers or anything at all anymore since I've gone this. I don't need them.
And have they checked your tumour since?
Yes. So I've been, when I came home from Mexico, there was actually shrinkage of a centimetre and a half.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then it grew then when I tried the Pembro, which, you know, I know for some people it's worked for them that it's held off for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But like that, it just...
Everybody's individual.
Everybody's individual. And then they checked it again there when I was in Germany. And yeah, it seems to be holding again. It even had a slightly smaller marker. So it did, but I'm just keep telling myself, no, it's stable. I don't, with figures and with different machines in different countries, and you know, you never know, there's always a few millimeters and stuff in the difference. But I just, once I know it's holding and it's not bigger, that's all I think of. I don't worry about, you know, reductions too much. It's, you know, you tell me it's not there anymore and I'd be like, well, that's a reduction.
Yeah.
You know, so it's thankfully seems to be really, really holding. So like, it's just amazing. But that's why it'd be great to get it over here and be able to get all my infusions over here instead of traveling over and back, which, you know, it's not always going to be feasible, you know. And it's also like leaving the kids and trying to work around that I can go when it's going to be the least disruptive to them.
Yes.
You know.
And like, speaking of the kids, we're speaking on, what day of the week is this? Wednesday. And was it yesterday that Zoe had her HPV vaccine?
Big
moment.
Like, oh, I was nearly holding my breath. And I know I did have tears in my eyes when she got it. And I was just like, I think I was just a couple of years out.
Yeah.
So it was when that came into, you know, schools and stuff. And I know for me, I probably would have been sexually active by that stage anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a chance that you could easily have had the HPV, you know, virus and anything by then, who knows. But yeah, it was huge.
Huge.
It was huge. It actually should have been her second one, but because I hadn't been feeling well or something happened back when she was supposed to get her first one, we ended up missing it. But she went and she got her first one, and she'll be back again now in 6 months for the second dose that you do. But it's huge.
Yeah,
it's huge. And I know for a lot of people that vaccines and stuff is a touchy subject. And, you know, I'm like, you got to weigh up the the pros and cons in your own situation. Mm. I mean, you will hear horror stories and then you'll hear good stories, and it's just what feels right for you. And I spoke with her dad, because I didn't just automatically go and just get it for her. I spoke with him, but we, like, in our house, I most certainly, if I can in any way help protect her,
sure,
you know, and it's not as if it's a vaccine that's only just out. Sure. You know, there is a couple of years, and, you know, people can have different reactions and all for different reasons. But we've taken that gamble. Yeah. And I really, in my gut, I believe that it was going to do her more benefit than harm.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm actually glad you said that, because I think conversations like this can be an emotional, I don't know what you call it, but it could just be a tricky one for people to navigate, because we all bring your own experience to the table. Yeah. And for a lot of people, when they get diagnosed with cancer, are people they love and they're put on a treatment to chemo, it might be the right thing for them.
Exactly.
And everybody's individual, but we can't just say blanket, this is going to work for everyone. It's the same for everything. And we have to respect each and everyone's personal decisions. And you've made your decision for you, and clearly you're here today.
Yeah.
What I can see, and again, I know what we see sometimes is deceptive, but you're certainly, the vibe from you is very vibrant and very much alive.
Very, very much. That's a loads of people, loads of people that know me be like, oh, I don't know, Lindsay. Like, I just know you, and I just feel that no, you're going to be fine. And yeah, that's what I'm believing anyway, that, you know, I'm going to be more than fine. I'm just going to live life, and not delusional, but, you know, why think of all the doom and gloom? There is enough days where I do feel like that, and I always let myself have 2 or 3 days, and I nearly always know when they're coming. Because there's sometimes that, you know, your brain takes over and freaks you out a little, and then I'm like, no, stop it. Stop it. Go back. You can't control. I'm like, nobody knows in the morning when they wake up whether that is the last time that they get to open their eyes or not. And I've just been given a warning that, you know, things weren't good and that I needed to change my ways health wise. And that's what I have. It only took me 3.5 years to get to this point, to know that I'm on a better path of you know, helping myself. Even I had a little life coach who's her name's Laura. She's Mind Mommy Coaching, and just to even help me with the new goals and stuff that I want to do in life, and things that you won't do unless you actually have someone to give you that little push. So I've tried to come at myself, like, physically, mentally, psychologically, like, even changing my environment. I have my electric car, so I'm not, like, breathing in petrol fumes. And then gratitude more than anything. I'm just like, I remember I was smiling on the way down here and I was like, today is a good day. But that's because I finally got the help that I need in the house just to do those little jobs, so I can focus on all the other stuff that I'm doing. And I had to laugh because my home help was like, is it always go, 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 go in this house? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I have really needed someone to come in and help me, because if I have a couple of busy days in a row, I was like, things will sit here for a couple of days. And, you know, I'd be like, thank God I've got about 40 knives and forks and plates, because a lot of the times it's a new one and the old ones are still sitting there. So there's like, it's great to just start getting stuff to help. And, you know, while I am focusing on doing everything that, you know, helps me, whereas people are like, oh yeah, you know, you're well able to do these things, and I'm like, I am, but that is taking out, you know, precious time that I need to really be focused to get myself back to a place where I eventually can take everything back on.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you for you know, driving up from Longford to be here today to have the chat. I've taken so much from it. I know I'll be processing it for some time, and I know people listening will as well. And come here,
best luck with the wedding that's coming up.
I know. And all the plans. I know. So excited. Was only there. My other best friend, I was maid of honour for her there a couple of years ago, and she's finally home from Australia. Woohoo! So, off doing the duties again. This is like my fifth time. So I do always be joking, or people like, you know, will you ever get married? And I'm like, no, probably not. It's not ever been on my list, but I'll certainly be down the aisle a few times by the looks of it. But for someone else, which I absolutely love, and I was living in fear that I wouldn't be here for this when I'd gotten the bad news again in November gone by. But thankfully Germany and everything has brought me back on board, you know, and I'm like, yes, you can do this.
Yes, you can. Thank you, Lindsay. You're amazing.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so grateful to Lindsay for her time and for her openness. And if this episode resonated with you, you might want to go and listen back to my conversation with Vicky Phelan from 2019. It was the third episode I think I ever released, and I still get messages about it to this day. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Peace with an A, B-I, and then Peace with an I. Thank you so much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.